what is going on. Thank you for tuning in to the MMA Podcast 196. It is January 25th, 2017. A ton to break down. This past weekend, we had a big Bellator card, Bellator 170, featuring a big fight between Chael Sonnen and Tito Ortiz. Another big fight between Paul Daly, Brennan Ward. Going to talk about that. We got a couple title fights that look like they've been officially scheduled, including Daniel Cormier and Rumble Johnson, the rematch at UFC 210. And it looks like Stipe Miocic and Junior Dos Santos at UFC 211, even though that is not 100% official. Of course, this weekend upcoming, we got a Bellator card, 171, and UFC Denver Shevchenko Pena. Let's do it.
Listening to the MMA Podcast.
That's right, it's the MMA Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Like I said, a ton to break down. Joined tonight by the one and only P Money. He's on Twitter at Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, what's going on?
Oh, Jake, it's an extraordinary Wednesday over here in Southern California. It's been a lovely, lovely day. Nice 70s. Couldn't ask for any better. And looking forward to talking about the big topic of the weekend in MMA, which was the great last final fight of Tito Ortiz when he took on Chael Sonnen at Bellator 170. You know, get to recap that, break down the news like we always do, look forward to the future, break out the crystal ball. Just glad to be joining you, my friend.
Hell yeah. Yeah, it's starting to get chilly here on the Florida Panhandle. Supposed to be dipping down around freezing this weekend. I have a dentist appointment next week, so I have one of these little floss pick gimmicks in my mouth. So I don't get yelled at too much by the dentist when I stop by there. But yeah, let's get straight to it. Bellator 170, the only real big card, mixed martial arts wise, over the weekend. We can skip over the rest of the bullshit, even though the prelims did have a few fun finishes, a few notable names. Chinzo Machida winning by third round TKO, just a straight punch that dropped his opponent, Jamar Ocampo. Two familiar names to the podcast, Kevin Casey and Keith Barry, had a pretty good fight. Kevin Casey winning the first round 10-8 on the judges' scorecards, and then Keith Barry winning rounds 2 and 3 was a majority draw. I don't know if we'll see that fight made again, because it seemed like Casey really started to run out of gas there in the second round, and Barry was chasing him down, but unfortunately couldn't do enough to make up that 10-8 deficit in the first. On the main card, before you get to the main and co-main, Derek Campos defeating Derek Anderson via unanimous decision, Emmanuel Sanchez defeating Georgi Karakanyan by majority decision, and Hisaki Kato defeating Metamoris CEO and the guy who's kind of been lambasted in the news for not paying his fighters, Halleck Gracie. Gracie on the losing side of a unanimous decision. So yeah, before we get to the main and co-main, any thoughts, comments, questions, opinions on any of the fights that came beforehand?
Well, one of the things I can always count on in Bellator MMA, really a lot of promotions that aren't the UFC, are mismatches that produce fun finishes. Jack May TKOing Dave Cryer in 41 seconds in the first round. Chinzo Machida, as you aforementioned, getting the third round TKO over Jamar Ocampo. Good stuff there. Kevin Casey, I want to say the only fighter to have fought to a draw in Bellator as well as the UFC. I forget where I read that. Certainly I did not figure that statistic out on my own. Would love to source that, but do not recall where I read that, so hey, whatever. But that is a fact. That did happen. Yeah, good. Some decent action overall for Bellator 170.
Did I tell my Chinzo Machida RFA story last week on the MMA podcast?
I remember mention of being at the event.
I don't think I told it because I don't think I realized Chinzo Machida was on this card until I saw him walk out. But back, I guess this is late 2013. It was RFA. I believe the card was RFA 11. It was Zach Makovsky's last fight before he joined the UFC because he took the flyweight title from, oh man, I could pick the guy's name out of a lineup, but I can't think of it now. Anyways, Chinzo Machida was on the main card, fought some dude, I think his name was Brian Hall, and it is, of all the UFCs, of all the MMA events I've been to, this was the nastiest knockout I've seen in my entire life. Chinzo lands a flying knee, drops Hall. Hall has to be stretchered out, and we find out the next day that the guy had like a broken jaw, a broken nose, lost a bunch of teeth, and he broke the upper palate of Brian Hall's mouth, which is like if you feel straight up with your tongue, like that part of the like roof of your mouth, like behind your teeth that like peanut butter gets stuck to, like the roof of your mouth. The flying knee broke the roof of homie's mouth. He landed it so hard. It was a terrible night for Brian Hall. I did sneak backstage and got a clip of Lyoto Machida being like, "Hi, I'm Lyoto Machida, the MMA podcast." Like, he didn't know what the fuck was going on. I had an awesome time, but that was my little Chinzo Machida RFA reference. That was in Denver, I think, late 2013. I don't know. I think it was on Axis. I don't know. Another digression, but yo, let's get to speaking of, that's actually a great segue, because speaking of absolutely devastating flying knee knockouts, let's get to that co-main event, Paul Daly and Brendan Ward. They both pledged a bang, they both pledged a quick finish, they were spot on, because Paul Daly, after feeling Brendan Ward out for about a half a round, lands this flying knee that picture of his face from after the fight was distributed on Twitter, late that night and the next day. And it straight up looks like an asteroid hit the dude's dome. Like, it was just this crater, this giant cut, and the dude say, I mean, it's going to be a definite longer road than usual to get back to 100% for Brendan Ward. And Paul Daly, who's known for, you know, more of his boxing savvy, known for that crazy left hook, not really known as a kicker, lands a flying knee, just showing his range. After the fight, calling out Rory McDonald, and Rory McDonald tweeted back very quickly, seeming interested in the fight. So maybe we see Daly versus Rory McDonald, perhaps, and the winner gets a title shot. I would love if Bellator did that, and I feel like that could be what they do. What do you think about that hellacious flying knee that was easily, you know, it's only been, you know, a few cards into 2017, but I think that's easily so far early on the knockout of the year.
Oh yeah, I mean, anytime you get the flying knee knockout, that's got to be at the high consideration for knockout of the year contender. And just, oh man, you could hear that hit. It was just like a home run hitter in batting practice. When they say when a major leaguer hits a home run, they can just tell by the sound, you know, the sound of that ball hitting the bat. And you could be sure that Paul Daly knew as soon as he heard that sound or felt that contact from the knee landing on Brendan Ward. And it, you know, maybe I was tripping while I was watching the replay too. It almost looked like he kind of did a secondary jump off of Brendan's knee as well. Like, That was just a beast of an attack there. I have to give Brendan Ward props. He was really doing about the best thing he could against Paul Daly. He was trying to wrestle Paul to the ground and trying to stay heavy on him, trying to get a little ground and pound going. But And also what I think might have helped was, as Paul Daly was getting up from carrying Brandon Ward's weight, he hit a very nice spinning back elbow on the break, maybe a little more tricep. It wasn't quite on the point of the elbow, but still definitely it looked like it had the potential to ring his bell. And immediately after that spinning back elbow is when the flying knee came. So it was just a very good 1-2. Not the kind of thing, as you mentioned, Jake, we typically see from Paul Daly. We normally see those fundamental, devastating missile hands and the good boxing, putting the hands on chin that does it. But, man, he really mixed it up. And, yeah, Brandon Ward, he paid. I mean, we're expecting a knockout, but, dang, I hate to see anything that bad. That was just pure savagery.
Pure savagery indeed, and another quick finish in the main event, a rear naked choke, Tito Ortiz finishing his career with a W over Chael Sonnen. Not Chael's best performance. You know, he's talked before about self-sabotage and giving up too early, and I think this was a case of him just, not... A lot of people are crying work. Pat, I know you maybe alluded to something like that before. I am strongly I'm strongly against that line of thought, even though, you know, I for sure accept it. We had Ramses as a co-host for dozens, if not over 100 episodes. You know, he's a very good friend of mine, and when he talks about works, you know, I let him have his peace, even though I don't agree with him. This has been a fight where I've probably heard more than any other fight, that except maybe Shamrock Kimbo, which that fight was a work. The fight was a work. I don't know. Just I don't think this fight was a work, but this fight for sure was about as satisfying, especially to a Chael Sonnen fan. This was about as satisfying as eating a freshly crapped turd. I don't know. It was Chael just didn't look very good at all. Tito, you know, of course, talking shit like Tito does whenever he wins. What did you make about this fight? I don't know. It's been a rough January, as a guy who two of his favorite fighters, Chael Sonnen and BJ Penn, lose back to back weekends, just devastating fashion. I mean, at least Penn lost to someone with skill. Chael lost in the first round to a fucking bum. Tito Ortiz is not only a fucking bum, he is the definition. If you look up F for fucking bum, you will see a picture of Jacob Tito Ortiz there, which the dude's name isn't even Tito, it's Jacob. Man up and accept your fucking name of Jacob. I'm named Jacob. It's not so bad to be named Jacob, but no, you're fucking Tito, so you can rock the whole Mexican thing. Fuck you, Tito Ortiz. I'm glad you're out of the sport. I've never enjoyed you. I'm a little upset that you beat Chael, but you know what? Chael, we'll be back, hopefully at middleweight, because I'm sorry, 205 is his steroid weight, and now that he's off the sauce, he looks deflated as shit at 205. Tito looked way bigger than he did. So I hope, A, he drops down to 85, which was tough to make when he was on the juice, but now that he didn't look like he was on the sauce at Bellator 170, so I assume he's off of it. So if you're going to be off of it, fight at 85. If you fight again at 205, I expect you to be on way more steroids than you were this time around. I don't know. What did you think of the fight, man?
Man, I don't even know what to think about this fight. I don't even know what to think about Bellator MMA as an organization. Overall, really, I mean, we talked about it last week on last week's podcast. The only time Tito Ortiz and Chael Sonnen competed against each other was in a college wrestling match in which Chael pinned Tito very quickly. In a matter of 40 some odd seconds. And one of my things, especially in rematches, is if you beat him before, you can beat him again. And that really wasn't, again, it was a different sport. It was a different sport, but it was not even close, really. And this was a fight that was contested almost entirely of grappling. They both threw some incredibly half-hearted exchanges. Neither of these guys are really known for the hands, but you know what? And even then, again, it kind of makes you wonder because Tito Ortiz, his hands had improved a little bit over the years. You would think he wouldn't be scared to stand and trade with Chael. Chael is not a man who's typically known and feared for his hands, at least on the feet. You know, he'll drag you down to the ground and then put a little ground and pound on you. That's where he does his work. But you would think Tito Ortiz would try and enjoy the size advantage, maybe get a little boxing going, but no, they went right for the grappling. And Chael hit a slick sweep, had a nice little reversal, was threatening with the Darce choke there, and drops down for this guillotine. Tito gets out and passes to mount like nothing, and you know, starts going for a little ground and pound. Of course, Chael wants to avoid it, and that's the beginning of the end. Tito gets it back, starts working for this submission. It's not under the chin. Looks like it's barely even on either of his arteries. I don't know. I don't know how he's turning purple unless he's holding his breath. I don't want to say that this is as bad as Homeboy losing by an Ezekiel choke with no gi the other week, but just given the relative experience of these two competitors, yeah, Chael Sonnen has lost more than once by submission. That kind of has been his Achilles heel, but man, this just looked like the shittiest choke. Yeah, Tito's a big guy, and he weighed in at 205. He was probably even larger than that. Probably 220, 230 come fight night. And even if it's not a solid choke, just having that around your neck area, having that kind of compression, granted, that's going to be quite uncomfortable. I just don't really see where he was in danger of going unconscious. Would I like Tito Ortiz demonstrating that on me? No. But that's just me commentating from my perspective. I don't know. I'm not going to cry fix, but man, it really doesn't look like there was a whole lot of fighting or a whole lot of trying going on there. Nobody really absorbed any strikes. I don't know, man. Bellator MMA, what's up, man? These headliners, I mean, come on. You mentioned yourself, Jake. The Kimbo versus Shamrock. Mm-hmm. And
Kimbo. Let's talk. Aren't both of those Shamrock, dudes dead now?
Dada Kimbo. God damn.
Dada died the night of the fight. Kimbo died 2 weeks later. Fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Dada came back to life. Thank God. He was resuscitated.
Rest in peace, Kimbo.
Rest in peace, Kimbo, man. Rest in peace, Kimbo. Shamrock versus Gracie. These main events, a lot of the stuff they're doing, very suspect these days. Again, nobody got hurt too bad, ends by a submission. Tito goes out on a win. Chael can say, oh, you know, it's like that scene in the movie where, you know, like a classic 80s movie where they're having like the downhill ski race or something like that, and the guy's about to win, but then he sees like he's got like this great life and this other person like has shit and this is like all they have, so that then he throws it and lets the other person win because he knows it's all he have. Like Chael Sonnen, you know, this is like, he can always say he did that move. You know, he's like, I felt sorry for Tito. This is all he's got. I let him have one last one. Gave him one last bone, you know. I mean, there's opportunity there. Motive, easy payday. I don't know. I'm not saying it was. I'm not saying it wasn't. But didn't look like the most hard fought fight.
I'm sick of talking about Penn losing, Chael losing, watching my fucking idols going down in flames. So let's get to the news. what I think makes for the best story of 2017 so far, Sage Northcutt saying he was invited to train with Nick and Nate Diaz. Dog.
Yes.
I can just imagine Sage cracking up a stone Nick and Nate, eventually giving in, smoking a little pot, and I don't know, maybe he changes his gimmick up 100%, just starts acting like a Diaz brother, just goes full 180 heel, starts fucking shoving people, like keeps the same like smiling and like Jesus boy gimmick, which starts to shove people at the weigh-in and flick them off with a big smile on his face during the fight. Oh my god.
Oh man. I'd love to see that. I mean, really. And I think that could help Sage. I mean, he's got the good fundamental karate background, but the Diaz brothers, they've got the just good boxing fundamentals. I mean, well, people say they're unorthodox, but you'll be standing in the pocket and trading. And, I mean, of course, that Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, they're wrapping fools up like nobody's business up there in Stockton.
Honestly,
so,
style-wise, this would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I think it's good. It could definitely help. Could help Sage round it out. And I mean, yeah, some would say definitely needs to still continue to work on the wrestling. Get the good wrestling coach going somewhere. But hey, this certainly can't hurt. I mean, Sage is incredibly young, and this is a good move for him this early.
His quote on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani was, "They mentioned getting some training together in the future, so we'll see if that happens. They were just super nice guys, so it was cool to meet them." Saying, "so we'll see if that happens," to me, that's always sounded like a no. He also said in the interview that he was going to move down to 155 next. Stated his mental game was something he was addressing. Quote, "I'm not taking my time and I'm not being calm. I'm still trying to figure out how to be calm." And in the article, Bloody Elbow quipped, "I'm sure that Nick and Nate could offer him something that could help him out in that area a little bit." Marijuana.
Bazing.
Bazing.
Talk about
boop, 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 boop. Let's get to the next news story, which is Daniel Cormier versus Anthony Johnson 2, officially set for UFC 210, which will be in Buffalo, New York, on April 8th. Why am I talking like this? Because I'm really stoked for the fight, I guess. This is going to be a fun fight. They fought the first time at UFC 187 in May 2015. Cormier won that fight to become the light heavyweight champion after then-champion John Jones was stripped of the title due to legal issues stemming from a hit-and-run accident. The pair were scheduled to rematch at UFC 206 in December. However, DC had to withdraw from the fight due to a groin injury. Cormier actually, I think, has only defended his title one time, if I'm not mistaken. I think he won the title originally over Rumble, and then he defeated Alex Gustafson for his first defense, and then he fought Anderson Silva in a non-title fight at 205. Yeah, I think this will only be his second title defense, which it seems like he should have more, but, he's an AKA guy, so he gets injured a lot. I think, yeah, he was supposed to fight
Shots
Jones.
Fired.
Well, I mean, you know, Cormier, honestly, he, Sonnen and Penn make up my top three favorites of all time, you know, and I hate to jump on his back, and it's not really DC's fault. I guess it is a little bit, but it seems like a lot of the guys there, I don't know what's going on in training, if they're training too hard, if their strength and conditioning coach, which I think the strength and conditioning coach might be the thing, because I've seen videos of like Cain Velasquez doing leg workouts, and it looks like the most non-form, destructive, high-speed, high-intensity, high-impact weightlifting, like dangerous shit I've ever seen. That's a whole another issue, I guess. But yeah, DC 18-1 hasn't fought since that fight against Anderson Silva at UFC 200. That was originally supposed to be Cormier Jones. And yeah, Rumble just knocked out Glover Teixeira at UFC 202, a month later. Johnson has also fought Cormier's fought twice. Johnson's fought three times since fighting DC, has won all three. I got Cormier again in this fight. You know, it seems like the same prediction everyone is giving, but it's the most obvious one in that the question is, like most Rumble Johnson fights, can you survive the first round flurry? And if you can you turn up the pace later on in the fight, make him gas, make him lose, and either win a decision or finish him late? Because that seems like the formula to beat him. It was how Cormier beat him. I mean, Johnson has not lost many times since losing to Belfort way, way, way back in the day when he was trying to be a welterweight. Since he lost to Belfort and got cut by the UFC, I think he only lost lost twice in like 20 fights. And that was when he got knocked out by Pitbull at heavyweight and like Strikeforce or Titan, wherever the fuck he was during that fight. And the loss to Cormier at 187. So these are honestly two pound for pound top 15 guys. This is a skill matchup that we don't get to see often. This is on the level of a Dillashaw Cruz or a Garbrandt Cruz. These guys are both very, very, very good at their jobs. They're both black belts in mixed martial arts, so I'm really looking forward to seeing this fight. Who do you have in this one?
Oh, man. Well, as you mentioned, I mean, Cormier has already shown the ability to solve the Anthony Johnson puzzle, survive that first round, you know, avoid the big power. Well, although he did take some of the big power from Anthony Johnson and almost got put away. But in that first fight, Cormier was able to survive, come back, and use his superior wrestling pedigree to ultimately win him that fight. And this is a rematch where, I mean, Anthony Johnson, if he's able to just tighten it up a little bit, maybe, you know, be a little more conservative and you know, because he's got some solid wrestling himself. He's got a very good height and reach advantage as well over Daniel Cormier. So if he just tunes it up a little bit, I mean, I could see him getting it done. But Cormier with his Olympic class level wrestling, it's just so tough to negotiate. And I don't know. I think I got to side with Cormier again in this one. It's not very often that I pick the person who lost in a rematch to win the rematch. And as good as Anthony Johnson has looked in rebounding from that loss to Cormier, man, I just think that DC has enough of what it takes to retain the championship in this one.
Yeah, I'm leaning the same way. I'm curious if there's an official lineup for it yet. Let's see. Nope, nothing yet, but I do assume that Daniel Cormier should be a slight favorite there. Another fight we're going to see at UFC 210. Again, that's going to be April 8th in Buffalo, New York. Chris Weidman versus Gegard Mousasi. Gegard is all around a great fighter, and he only loses to great fighters. But simply put, I just think Weidman's wrestling, and just, you know, I mean, the guy hits hard and is one of the few guys that can really overwhelm Gegard. Gegard usually is the one setting the pace, throwing kicks. You know, he's very, very efficient, very, very technical. But I think Weidman, coming off two losses to Rockhold and Romero, is going to be hungry for a win. And I have him finishing Gegard in the second or third round, actually. I think, You know, this is just a guy who is very, very good at everything versus a guy who is very, very good at almost everything and great at things like wrestling, ground and pound, throwing just heavy punches. And I think Weidman sets the pace and defeats Gegard. I think Weidman's a little bigger too. I think he puts Gegard out in the second or third.
Oh boy, I really like that that prediction there. Very bold. You know, man, I think this is a good one for Gegard. I mean, Weidman has really superior grappling. I would have to give him the edge in this one as well. But Musasi is certainly no slouch with his Brazilian jiu-jitsu. He's very creative with his control. He's good off his back, and he's got good submissions. Again, I definitely do think that Weidman can control and probably dominate that aspect. He's got the wrestling edge, which will help in the overall grappling game. But, man, Musasi in that striking. Musasi definitely holds a striking edge. Weidman has been tuning it up. And, you know, he's working with Wonderboy, or at least he has been lately. But I think Musasi may just be a little more dangerous to Weidman than Weidman is to Musasi. Weidman, he's got some lethal ground and pound, and again, very creative with the submissions. But, man, I don't know. Musasi has looked pretty good lately. I would be much more convinced if he had never lost the first fight to Uriah Hall. He was able to avenge that loss with a very solid victory, and he's been finishing people left and right. I don't know. Right now, I may be liking Musasi early for this one.
Leaning toward the European there in Gegard. Or is he Iranian? I guess that would make him Asian. I don't know. Let's go stick to the fight announcement thing. UFC 211, the next pay-per-view ahead. It looks like we're going to have Stipe Miocic versus Junior Dos Santos. Originally, it sounded like Stipe was going to fight Verdum after Kane dropped out of the Verdum fight at UFC, what was it, 20-something recently. And there's been a lot of back and forth. Dana White saying that Verdum turned by two fights by asking for more money. Verdum said that was false. Verdum had this insane interview where he called Junior Dos Santos a homosexual. And now it looks like Junior Dos Santos is going to get the rematch, fight Stipe Miocic on May 13th in Dallas at UFC 211. Although that's not confirmed yet, it has been highly rumored and reported on by Brazilian I don't know, magazine, website, newspaper, whatever they are, Globo. They reported that the Brazilian would return to fight for the belt. Junior winning the fight against Stipe the first time around, even though it was a controversial win. It was a very, very close fight. This would be a fun scrap. I don't know who wins, honestly. Stipe's been a good champion, but Junior won it the first time. Junior's got punch and power. Who are you picking in this one? I'll pick the opposite.
Oh, man. Yeah, right. This, you really can make the case either way. I mean, you could... Man, I don't know. I kind of thought Stipe had the first one. I mean, that was a close one. That's one I should go back and rewatch again. But, I mean, I seem to remember Stipe with a lot of pressure along the cage, just pounding old Junior's face in. But, I mean, Junior certainly put in some work himself. Man, I don't know. This is going to be a great match. Certainly, this is a rematch that I think is going to be just as hard to call. Both guys got the momentum. I mean, now Stipe's the champion. Junior has, you know, he had a few setbacks, but now he's getting on the right track. Gee whiz. This is a tough fee, but I think, man, I'm going to have to go with Stipe in this one, man. He's champion these days, And he's going to have that momentum. He made his first defense in his hometown. You know, he's got a lot of that out of the way. And you'd think he'd be hungry to avenge a loss that he thinks maybe should have been a win in the first place. So I think I'll go with Stipe. That's my early inclination.
You're going Stipe. I'll go with the guy who won it the first time around. We've seen Stipe get rocked in a couple fights and will his way back, but will he be able to do that with the hardest hitting puncher in the UFC in Junior Dos Santos? We will see. The odds, I'm sure, will be close to even on that fight, and for good reason. I don't know. I'll probably root for Stipe just because we haven't seen a dominant heavyweight champion ever in the UFC, and that'd be a cool thing to see. So I'll always root for whoever's holding that belt, but wouldn't be shocked to see Junior take it from him. So I guess after that, we just have the weekend to look forward to. And I did want to finish that thing we were doing last weekend where we were kind of going weight class by weight class and breaking down the title pictures of each. We talked last week about Joanna, just how there's really a big question mark about who's next for her, because she's literally wiped out the whole division. Maybe Michelle Watterson, one of the few people coming up there. It's obvious in bantamweight we have this fight this weekend between Nunez and Shevchenko, between Shevchenko and Pena, and the winner will fight the champion Nunez. Featherweight, Holm versus De Randamie is the obvious fight there. Coming up with the men, we have Johnson, who will probably fight Benavidez next for what will be his 10th title defense, tying Anderson Silva. We'll see Garbrandt Dillashaw probably sometime early 2017. Aldo Holloway the same. And that brings us to lightweight. We're going to do the top five weight classes. I don't know. I guess the obvious answer here is we're going to see Khabib versus Tony Ferguson fight, and the winner take on Conor McGregor. Do you think Nurmagomedov is your lightweight champion by the end of 2017? Because just the way he's ground through people, as good as Conor looks, he's you know, shown a weakness against maybe the grappling style that Khabib brings. I don't want to leave Tony out either, because he's on a crazy, like, 8 or 9 fight win streak, subbing out people. I mean, this is a crazy good 1-2-3 in fighters, in Conor, Khabib, and Tony. All of them bring different skills to the table. Cleanly put, who do you think is the champion in 11 months when we are wrapping up the calendar year?
Jake, I kind of almost hate you just for asking me that question.
That's a tough.
Dude, that is, I mean, you could really make the case for anybody. I mean, Conor McGregor, you can't count him out. He's proved everybody wrong at just about every turn of his career. I mean, nobody thought he could win a lot of the matches he's had. I mean, Chad Mendes, Jose Aldo, fighting for the 155-pound title. Beating Nate Diaz at 170 pounds. And he's proved everybody wrong at just about every single turn. So, I mean, you can't count him out. Nurmagomedov, he can wrestle anybody into the dirt and just bury you. He can TKO you with some ground and pound. I want to say he actually finished someone standing with the hands. But again, typically the ground and pound is what you'd worry about, as well as that submission game. I mean, he just gets a hold of any part of you. He can drag you down to the ground and keep you there for the remainder of the round. And he's just ground everybody he's ever fought straight to hell. So, I mean, you could see him doing it. Tony Ferguson, one of the most creative fighters we've seen. He's getting better everywhere the game goes, at every single turn with his strikes, with his submissions. He's a true threat everywhere. Possibly the most well-rounded. I would probably say the most well-rounded of the three that we mentioned. I mean, Conor's got the striking, Khabib certainly with the ground game, and Tony just really good everywhere the fight goes. So, man, I can't wait to see how it plays out. How I would predict it. I mean, I could see it playing out any number of factors. If I had to pick gun to my head, I'd say Ferguson's the champ end of the year.
Wow, honestly, whew. That is a bold move. Honestly, I think for me it'd be between Connor and Khabib. And if I gotta pick one, I'm gonna pick Connor. But Khabib Nurmagomedov has a very, very good chance of being that guy. Let's move to welterweight. We got a rematch in the works between Tyron Woodley and Stephen Thompson. That will be fun as far as who is next up in line. Donald Cerrone said he wants to fight Damian Maia or Robbie Lawler. That, you know, Maia is for sure next in line. Whoever he fights would automatically become a title eliminator. Cerrone's already crept into that 5 spot at welterweight, so wouldn't be shocked if he gets a title fight at 170. He fights this weekend in Denver against Jorge Masvidal at welterweight, so that will be another good test for him. Him fighting the number 12 ranked welterweight in the world. I'll ask the same question about this. Who is the champion at the end of the year? You got Woodley and Thompson. You got Maya. You got Lawler out there. Donald Cerrone. I'm saying you're champ. Let's go, champ, at the end of 2017's Donald Cerrone.
Oh, man, I love that call. And, yeah, certainly possible. I mean, Cerrone's just been running through everybody. He's got all the momentum in the world. 170, I wasn't really sure, but so far it seems to look like a good weight for him. He's handled wrestlers, strikers, and he's done it all quite well. So I could see that happening. Man, I mean, I don't even know who's going to win between Tyron Woodley and Stephen Thompson in that rematch.
I know,
but
odds are about even, yeah.
I mean, if Donald Cerrone were to fight Damian Maia or Robbie Lawler, I mean, he could win either of those fights, but I mean, man, I feel like Damian Maia, that's not the fight he wants. Robbie Lawler, I think, is a better matchup for him. That would be an insane fight. But Damian Maia, he's like the Khabib of 170 pounds. He gets a hold of any part of you, you are going down. It doesn't matter. He will get you to the mat, and he will submit you quite handily. Man, I don't know if Cerrone wants any part of that. Oh, my God. Damn it, Jake. Put me on the spot again. You know, I think if I had to pick champion at the end of the year, Damian Maia. I think I can see him do it. If I mean, he can submit absolutely anybody in the weight class. He just needs people to step up and sign and fight him. I think he could absolutely submit Woodley, Thompson, Lawler, Cerrone, and he submitted a good majority of everybody else. So I think Maia, if he stays healthy and gets the fights, will be the champ by the end of 2017.
Last three weight classes, middleweight, Michael Bisping going up against Yoel Romero. And we're both going to take Yoel in that fight, right? I think the odds will probably have Yoel as a favorite, and I don't think Bisping can tiptoe past this one like he was able to with Dan Henderson.
I mean, you know what? Who knows with Bisping and the way he's looked? Again, talk about a guy who's proved everybody wrong at every turn. Didn't think he would beat Silva. I mean, a lot of people still don't think he beat Silva. Didn't think he would win the fight against Rockhold, the rematch against Rockhold after getting smoked the first time. Didn't think he would defend his belt. I mean, my God. Yeah, Bisping has been proving everybody wrong. He's got the height. He's got the reach. However, Yoel Romero is kind of like Dan Henderson 2.0. Although they're like the same age, Romero just has even better wrestling credentials and seemingly even heavier hands. He's just destroyed people with those hands. I don't know if Bisping really wants any part of Romero, but if he's really on his bike the way he was against Anderson Silva, I don't know. I could see him doing it. I could see him potentially out cardioing Yoel and outlasting him, outpointing him to a decision. So, looking at the rankings and the way it's going, we got Jacare, he's fighting Tim Boach. Man, I don't know what's going on here. You know what? I'm going to say, from out of nowhere, Jacare is going to come out and win the title by the end of 2017. He's going to be the champ.
I like that. He has been kind of the guy in waiting for a long time. You got Bronson Silva. Will Bronson move up the ladder? Where's Robert Whittaker belong? Oof. Where will the winner of that Weidman Musauzi fight end up? Could they end up fighting for a title at the end of this year? I'm going to say that by the end of 2017, your champion is Yoel Romero, and he's got a notch or two as far as defenses go under his belt as well. 205. It's a question mark. I don't know when John Jones is going to come back. You figure it's his division, and until he comes back, I mean, if you think anyone other than DC or Johnson is going to hold that belt, I think you're crazy. You know, both of them have shown just that they're leagues above every other 205er in the UFC. So, I mean, whoever wins this fight at UFC 210, I think it's their belt. And I think, like what happened at UFC 187, I think this is Cormier's belt until Jones comes back. When he comes back, I think they'll have a closer fight than the first time around. But, man, as good as John Jones is, 205 is his until I see any proof going against that. He kills people at that weight, and I have him as, I guess, your end of 2017 champ, if that's the theme we're doing for today's breakdowns. I think DC beats Johnson, but loses, albeit in a closer fight this time, loses to John Jones again.
I could very well see that happening. Both predicted Cormier retaining against Anthony Johnson at the rematch. So, I think the only way John Jones doesn't become the champion by the end of this year is if he doesn't get the fight with Daniel Cormier in his first fight back. Because I want to say, I'm not quite sure as to when his suspension is up. I was feeling like it was like June, but I cannot be 100% certain. But either way, he'd have to get slotted up in that matchup almost immediately upon being reinstated. If he were, I'd still pick him. I mean, again, this is the case of someone, who doesn't have his title just by virtue of the fact that he's shot himself in the foot repeatedly. And I think if he can get his act together, get in the cage for the belt, he will win that belt and be the champion by the end of the year. If that is not the case, I think DC is the top dog in the weight class. And he's truly a pound-for-pound great. I mean, he was undefeated in his run at heavyweight, beat some of the best in the world at heavyweight, and has only ever lost to John Jones at light heavyweight. So he's certainly one of the greats, and I think he'll continue to hold down the weight class in 2017 and in perpetuity until/unless John Jones comes back.
And your final weight class, heavyweight. Like I said, you were going to see Stipe versus Verdum. Now I think we're going to see Stipe versus Junior. Where does Verdum belong? How long until Cain gets back? I'll let you start this one out. Who is your champ at the end of 2017?
Ooh-wee. You know what? I'm going with Stipe just based on the fact. I mean, I'm picking him over Dos Santos. I think he'll be able to get the decision on this one. He's already defeated Overeem. He's already defeated for Verdum very soundly. I really don't know unless Kane were able to get slotted in there for a match this year. Stipe and Kane, I don't recall them ever having fought. But unless that were to happen, I think that'd be his only threat. And really, man, I don't know. Stipe is much larger than Kane. I think with his boxing power, I think he'd have the ability to put hands on Kane as well. But then again, he's a tough one to pick against. But you know what? I think I'm just gonna have to go with Stipe retaining throughout 2017. I that might put him up for a record number of title defenses. Who knows how many he'd be able to muster up this year? But I think he can do it, man. He's solid everywhere the game goes.
It's funny you mentioned Kane because for all the reasons you mentioned, you know, Kane just puts that constant pressure on you, has just that way he brings it relentlessly, doesn't stop with that constant pressure. I think Stipe's a guy who likes to get settled, likes to box. People, you know, have Kane's fought a lot of fighters like Stipe, and I don't think Stipe's fought a lot of A-plus wrestlers like Kane. And I think as long as they're not fighting in Mexico City or Denver or somewhere that has a high altitude, if they're fighting at sea level, then Kane is able to work his wrestling. He has awesome ground and pound. I've kind of maintained that Kane's the best heavyweight in the world for a while. Just he's kind of been hampered with injuries, like all those guys in American Kickboxing Academy, like I referred to earlier. So if he's able to make it through the year without any injuries, which he hasn't had many of those, I'll say Kane is your champion at the end of 2017. Let's real quick look at this weekend and then get the hell out of here. Bellator 171 Friday night, Melvin Gillard against Chidi Njokuani. Chidi's a big favorite. David Rickles also on the card. Rickles a huge favorite. AJ McKee, a giant minus 1100 favorite against Brendan Phillips. So this is just kind of a one of those cards, Bellator 171 drew up. There's going to be a lot of smashes on it. Jessica Middleton minus 230 against Alice Smith-Yager. And those are the only four lines posted right now that I can find. So a lot of squash matches. Melvin Gillard always has a puncher's chance, but he's fighting very, very game Chidi Njokuani, who will probably take that main event this Friday at the Kansas Star Arena in Mulvane, Kansas. Any thoughts on that card?
No, not particularly. I mean, really, you hit the nail on the head with this one. I mean, our boy, the young assassin, Melvin Gillard, well, I was going to say it's not really the same, but kind of the same. He's always had all the talent in the world, but just been up and down. Sometimes doesn't perform. We got the young, up-and-coming Chidi Njokuani, of relation to Anthony Njokuani.
Bang, bang.
Bang, bang. I think Chidi's got this one. David Rickles versus Aaron Darrow. I've got no clue who Darrow is. Rickles probably got a nice little get-right fight there. So, yeah, nice set of squash matches, like as you mentioned, we typically see so often from Bellator.
Yeah, Chidi undefeated, going back almost 4 years and 8 fights. So we'll see how he does against Melvin with the 32-16 record there. Let's get to the big UFC card. Well, not that it's a giant card, but it'll be bigger than the Bellator one. In the Pepsi Center, my old stomping grounds, Denver, Colorado. A fun main card they put together there for Denver. Curious why they put a heavyweight fight there. I guess maybe new ownership, because the last time they ran an event in Denver, they put some heavyweights on it, and they looked terrible because you're a mile high. But I don't know, maybe they didn't learn their lesson, but we'll we shall see. Saturday night is UFC on Fox 23, but let's do like we always do, start with the prelims. A lot of familiar names. Actually, the top two fights on the prelims should be very notable. You have Nate Marquardt and Smiling Sam Alvey at middleweight, and a big fight at 135, Rafael Assunção versus Aljamain Sterling. Both of these guys seem to be on rocket ships to the top that sputtered a little bit, both taking a loss, both looking to get back in the win column. The line currently on that Sterling fight is pretty close. Rafael is -140 to Sterling's +120. Alvey, a slight favorite too against Nate Marquardt at -155. Li Jiang, a slight favorite at -150 against Bobby Nash. Marcos Rogério de Lima there, a favorite against Jeremy Kimble, who I think Kimble, funny enough, the wrong person. I want to say was the last person to beat Chidi and Jaquani, but that was another Jeremy something, because I doubt the person who beat Chidi and Jaquani is now fighting at 205. But yeah, some fun matchups, especially toward the top of those prelims. And then we got Alex Caceres versus Jason Knight. I don't know much about this Jason Knight guy, but apparently he's pretty good, even though he doesn't have his own Wikipedia page. He's -155 against Bruce Leroy. And then what should work out to be a squash match, Andre Arlovsky. I don't know what the deal is. He was looking like he was just on a tear there for a while there in 2014, 2015. But 2016 was not his year. He went 0-3, losing to Stipe, Alistair, and Josh Barnett. He's +340 against Francis Ganeau, which, you know, odds-wise, I like Arlovsky here. I think that Vegas is maybe giving Ganeau too much credit for wins against guys like Curtis Blaydes, Bohan Mikaljevic, and Anthony Hamilton, and maybe punishing Arlovsky too much for losing to the last two guys who fought for the belt in Overeem and Miocic, and another killer grappler in Josh Barnett, who caught him with a submission. I actually might just put a buck on Andre here, just because he's such a ridiculous underdog at +340. But, he is not being looked at very favorably in the eyes of Vegas, who think the younger Francis Ganeau, who is 30, which might put him as the youngest guy, the youngest ranked heavyweight in the UFC. I don't think there's anyone in their 20s on that list. The 6'4 Frenchman, also known as the Predator, coming in with a giant 83-inch reach. What do you think about all of these fights going down from a fun start to the main card, and of course what should be a nice little round of prelims too?
Pretty solid. I mean, the fight pass portion of the card, really, I have no clue who these guys are. Again, no Wikipedias there. Not a whole lot of Wikipedias on the Fox Sports 1 portion of the preliminary card either, but Nate Marquardt versus Sam Alvey, Rafael Assunção versus Aljamain Sterling. A couple great fights there for the Fox Sports 1 prelim card. I'll just call him the Leech versus Bobby Nash. That should be good. I like the Leech. Fan of his work at 170 there. I'm liking the matchups. Alex Caceres versus Jason Knight should be a good featherweight scrap. Caceres seems to be doing a little bit better these days at 145 pounds. I mean, he's fought at a bunch of different weight classes for the UFC. Had a close one. I mean, it was a split with Yair Rodriguez in his last fight. Split decision loss, but handy wins over Cole Miller and Maceo Fullen prior to that. So he's fared pretty dang good at 145. Should be a nice contest between him and Jason Knight. And yeah, Andre Arlovsky versus Francis is Ngannou, Ganeau. I'm not quite sure.
I think it's Ganeau.
Gano. Yeah, that was one thing I noticed too, that the young blood and Gano being a huge favorite in Vegas to Andre Arlovsky, when the talent that they have fought respectively just doesn't match up. This is I don't want to be disrespectful, but this is a large step up in talent for Francis Gano. And, you know, Andre Arlovsky, I don't want to say this is a huge step down, but you know, this
is
a decent step down.
Yeah,
it's a pretty big step down. I mean, you're fighting basically some of the best in the sport, and you know, now you're fighting a newcomer. So, I mean, Andre Arlovsky is still a beast. I mean, he came in with his return to the UFC on a good win streak and took out some good names there while he was doing it. Certainly, still some bigger names than Francis Gano has able to beat. I mean, TKO and Travis Brown and Antonio Bigfoot Silva beating Frank Mir. Gano just doesn't have those names on his resume yet. If Gano's able to get this fight over Andre Arlovsky, then he certainly could. But man, I don't know. Yeah, the pit bull at like plus 300 or something like that. That's I usually shy away from the heavyweights and really. I think this will be one of those fights, but I really – someone's telling me, like, man, Arlovsky is just being slept on here. I think he could get this one done, although I wouldn't be surprised if the Predator gets the finish. But, yeah, I like Arlovsky in this one. And I like the card pretty much all the way around. Pretty solid.
Definitely,
looking.
Yeah. And that brings us to the main and co-main event. We'll start with the co-main. Donald Cowboy Cerrone looking to continue his reign of terror at UFC, or not at UFC, but at at the weight class of 170. He's 4-0 so far, defeating Alex Oliveira, Patrick Cote, Rick Story, and Matt Brown, all by finish. Now he's going up against Jorge Masvidal, who also recently moved up from 155 to 170. He has 5 fights. He's 3-2 after split decision losses to Benson Henderson and Lorenz Larkin. He decisioned Ross Pearson, TKO'd Jay Gallenberger, now going up against Donald Cerrone. Both of these guys are fairly similar in just the exciting way they fight. I would say Cerrone's a little bit more ground oriented and Jorge a little bit more stand up oriented, but both pretty much seem comfortable wherever the fight goes. You know, you have a guy in Masvidal who's known as a striker, but laid down that beautiful Dars choke submission against Michael Chiesa, who himself is dangerous as hell on the ground. Donald Cerrone coming off that head kick finish to Matt Brown. Cerrone has kind of shown in previous fights that his kryptonite is getting hit in the gut, so I'm sure Jorge Masvidal will be aiming for the body. And honestly is not as much of an underdog as I thought he would be in Vegas. I figured they might put him around plus 175, plus 180. He's only plus 135 to Cerrone's minus 155. So Vegas thinks this is a closer fight than I do. I'm leaning Cerrone here. But I don't know if I would bet on it or... I don't know. Minus 155 is a decent line for Cerrone, but I'm just cheap anyway and don't bet very often on fights. When I do, it's like $5 or $10 max. But yeah, this will definitely be the fight to watch on the card. This is your likely fight of the night. Both of these guys love to throw down, and I'm expecting nothing but a war.
Yeah, that's one thing you can bet on, Jake. Is this fight just being an absolute scrap? I mean, Masvidal and Cerrone, yeah, they love to throw. They do not love to retreat, and they're very similar, at least in my estimation. I mean, they both have a very, very well-rounded striking game, lots of different weapons on the arsenal, and they both have very solid ground games as well. So, I mean, this is going to be a great fight. Masvidal himself has bounced back and forth between 155 and 170. He's spent a little more time at 170 than Cerrone has, but I mean, they're just very similar, you know, height, reach, everything is going to be very close in this one. Virtually identical. The tail of the tape, man. It's
rest in peace, Goldberg.
Well, he didn't die. He didn't die. Thank God, you know. But his career is dead. No, Goldberg. Oh, he'll be fine. He'll be fine. Don't worry about Mikey. Don't worry about Mikey. He'll be good. My goodness. Yeah, I can't really call this one. This is, if anything, I don't know why. I'm getting this upset feeling from Masvidal. You know, he just is constantly going under the radar, and man, he is a scrapper. But at the same time, I mean, Cerrone has just been looking so good. Hard to go against him at this one. Oh my goodness. I don't know, man. I guess ultimately I'm going to have to go with Cerrone, but would not be surprised whatsoever if Masvidal actually gets a W.
Bringing us to our main event, we got Valentina Shevchenko against Juliana Pena. Valentina really put herself on the map with her last win against Holly Holm. Before that, she took a loss to the current champ, Amanda Nunes, at UFC 196. On the other hand, you have Juliana Pena, who's on a 4-fight winning streak, including decision wins against Jessica Ai and Kat Zingano at UFC 200. And like we mentioned earlier on the show, this fight will determine who's next up for the women's bantamweight belt, currently held by Amanda Nunes. This is close, man. This is close. Judging by that performance we saw Shevchenko put on against Holly Holm, it's hard to pick against her. She's a slight favorite in Vegas. If Pena can bring it to the ground, I think her chances of winning definitely increase a ton, because she's you know, got some dangerous jits. I think is probably better at the groundwork than Valentina Shevchenko, but Shevchenko just has looked masterful at keeping the range, and I think we'll be able to do that. We'll be able to shed the takedown attempts of Juliana Pena and keep it standing, and for that reason, I'm taking Shevchenko to earn herself a rematch against the champ, Amanda Nunes. Who you got in this one? The championship fight. Or the championship eliminator fight.
Yes, the number one contender fight. Jake, I think I'm going with Juliana Pena in this one. I mean, Shevchenko, she has looked very good. I mean, well, she impressed with her victory over Holly Holm, but she is not that far removed from her defeat to Amanda Nunes, and I feel like Juliana Pena is just a very similar fighter, very gritty. She's going to make the fight tough. She's got strong hands. She's a very strong 135-pounder. She will grapple you up. She'll pressure you, and I don't think that's the kind of fight that Shevchenko likes and is the one she's really the most comfortable with. She's got the great kickboxing acumen, but I think this is just the style, a style that is just a nightmare for her. I think technically, man, I love Shevchenko and what she does, but just in this particular styles make fight scenario, I think Pena is just going to pressure and just wear her out, make it an ugly fight, and just not give Valentina a chance. And I think she's going to earn a shot at Amanda Nunes for the 135-pound belt.
You heard it here first from P-Money. Juliana Pena will defeat Valentina Shevchenko and earn a shot at the belt. You heard it here first on the MMA podcast from me that Valentina Shevchenko will beat Juliana Pena and face Amanda Nunes for the belt. Either way, you heard it here first. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate the camaraderie that we built up between ourselves, callers, Listeners, if you are listening and want to leave us a voicemail, we'll play it as long as it's not horrible and disgusting. Call us at 213-457-3380. Leave a voicemail. You can talk MMA, talk Super Bowl. We got a big match between the Falcons and Pats. Talk whatever you want, and we will get to it next week. As always, we're on Twitter at the MMA Podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube. Pat, you got anything for the people?
Oh, Jake, I got nothing but love for the people. Follow, of course, the MMA Podcast at the MMA Podcast. Follow myself, Sweet Pappy Jones, and God bless everybody. Much love. Always a pleasure doing it with you.
Until next week, we
Jake, tune into the MMA Podcast every Tuesday night.
My God, yo.
Stop the wild style. Always been a foul child.
Will I, sucker? I'll be the coming like Noah.
The MMA Podcast, Jake is the host, and since Ramsey's been in a wheelchair, the Aunt Jimmy Show has been on the road. I wanna say John Jones is a hoe, so I think that I'll pick up the phone and dial 213-457-3380. We got hot takes on the stove, you get blood on your clothes if you're sitting in the front row. I throw on my gi and then I lace the hoops. I'll have Gal lying down cause he ain't the truth, and if Allen wasn't a cop, I'd mention you, and shout out to Ross Finkelstein the Jew, cause according to you, you're an MMA guru, a Rube Bisping lost his hands, Count Dooku. If you're a fancy boy, you get a 2-minute slot, Mr. Reed wants a title shot. So listen to the MMA Podcast, throw a high kick, but I block that, call me T.S., screaming George, where you at, I want the strap. But you know that I'll never tap. So listen to the MMA Podcast, throw a high kick, but I block that, call me T.S., screaming George, where you at, I want the strap. And you know that I won't tap. Mystery.